Welcome to Coffee with Ken, with your host, Ken Balsley.
Well, this is Coffee with Ken. I'm your host, Ken Balsley. We're at Fours of Coffee out on Marvin Road in Martin Way. And we thank them very much, not only for the location, but for the free coffee and tea sometimes. My guest today is a woman I've never met before. Well, I'm in passing, but it's Kim Young, who's the Director of Communications for Wolf Haven International. Welcome.
Thank you. Very nice to be here, Ken.
What should I know about you?
What should you know?
See, if I know something about you, then I can ask better questions.
All right. I am originally from St. Louis. I return there once a year because my family and childhood friends are still there. But my husband and I, we've traveled around a bit. We wanted to live in another country. And we were able to do that because of his career. He was a federal employee. So we lived in Germany a total of 6.5 years over 2 different time periods. And I've been in Washington State since 2000. Love it. Love it. I would not go back to Missouri, no offense, but I'm staying here. And I've worked at Wolf Haven for the past 8 years.
And that's it?
No kids, 2 Siamese cats.
Where'd you go to school?
Well, I went to most of the schools in Missouri, but I did go to graduate school in Lawrence, Kansas, University of Kansas. Go Jayhawks.
All right. And so how did you get to be, are you a Wolf fan? Are you an animal lover? I mean, how did you get to be with Wolf Haven International?
I am really glad you asked that because I usually tell people this tale. I do not have a background in biology or conservation. I have a degree in counseling. But as an adult, I worked primarily, once I got out of the counseling biz, I worked primarily in adult training. I love animals, but I never felt this strong passion to work at Wolf Haven, unlike a lot of my colleagues.
So a lot of people do come here just to work at Wolf Haven.
Well, a lot of people at Wolf Haven either have a background in conservation or they've worked for WDFW, or they start as a volunteer and they work their way into a staff position.
So it's something that they look forward to doing.
Yeah, is something they really want to do, and they feel this passion about wolves. And like I said, I love and respect all animals. I don't have that passion. I started going to Wolf Haven, though, the very year my husband and I moved here in 2000, because we live in Tumwater, and wherever I've lived, whether it's the Bay Area or Germany or Missouri, I look around to see, well, what is there to do that's interesting? So within that first 6 months, probably, we went to Olympia Farmers Market, Nisqually Wildlife Refuge, Tumwater Falls, and Wolf Haven. And then when people from out of state came to visit, my parents, my sister and her husband, friends, we take them to Wolf Haven. And it never crossed my mind that one day I would be working there. How that came about is there was a job opening. We had just returned from Germany for the second time. So I was looking, and I thought, this kind of matches what I've done. And I know and respect this place. So I applied, and I got hired by Trudy Sukup.
This is your director of communications. You got no background in media or communication or public relations. I mean, is it just that you're a good communicator?
I didn't study it. You're right. You're absolutely right. But I started working in what I consider an offshoot of communications, adult training, back in St. Louis before we ever left. When I decided to get out of the counseling business, I started looking for another field. And although I thought HR would be my natural place to segue, HR people didn't think so, because apparently you really do have to study that. But I was hired at that time by the largest law firm in Missouri, and they told me, we just want someone who can communicate. We'll teach you what to communicate. And that's what they did, and that started me out. So ever since then, I have been training, I've been writing manuals, I've been doing social media for businesses and nonprofit organizations.
Well, first of all, you have a great sense of humor, and I think that helps when you're dealing with people. But writing is something that, you know, most people don't just naturally gravitate toward. So did you have a training in writing?
I minored in English.
Oh, okay.
I have written a lot. I love to write. I mean, I love to read.
Not all communication, but you do a lot of writing.
I do. I do.
You print the newsletter? You write this?
The magazine Wolf Tracks, which is a membership magazine, our entire staff writes for that for the most part.
Do you edit it?
I do edit it. Okay. I'm the editor-in-chief. I write some articles for it, and my favorite one to write for each issue is called A Day in the Life, because I think it's probably safe to say.
A day in the life of each wolf or a day in the life of a staff member?
A day in the life of Wolf Haven.
Oh, okay.
So it can be either. I tend not to write about the wolves because I'm not in animal care, so I don't really know them that well. Our animal care staff write about the wolves, but interesting things happen when you work at an animal sanctuary, and I don't think there's ever a dull day there. So I have a lot of material.
So before we get too much further along in our conversation, why don't you give me a thumbnail sketch of what Wolf Haven is?
Okay. Wolf Haven is a nonprofit organization that has existed for 35 years.
That's funny. You call it a nonprofit. It's the first thing you said.
Yes.
It's not that it protects wolves or anything like that, but keep going.
Oh. I said that because...
Because you're always looking for money.
We are always looking for money. Plus, to be honest, some people confuse us with Great Wolf Lodge. Some people...
Oh,
they do. They'll call us trying to book a hotel room. And we have to explain we're not the same thing. Or they'd confuse us with, the one that's by Mount Rainier. Not Point Defiance, but the other...
Northwest Trek.
They confuse us with Northwest Trek. Well, I just want to make it clear, no, we are a sanctuary. We're a nonprofit.
All right, you're a nonprofit that what?
Our mission is working to conserve and protect wolves in their habitat. That's a mouthful. To break it down.
Do you have a mission statement?
Well, that's our mission statement, working to conserve and protect wolves in their habitat. We provide sanctuary for displaced captive-born wolves. We don't take in wolves from the wild. These are all wolves that were born into captivity, usually by breeders, which I could talk a lot about. And people buy them for thousands of dollars when they're pups, because what isn't cute when it's a baby?
And it's fun to say, I've got a wolf pup.
Exactly. And then when it's about, I'd say 2 years, they often start to display qualities that we've kind of bred out of
They
were bred out of wolves, and that's why we have dogs. So then they don't want the animal anymore, and a lot of them are euthanized. The luckier ones end up at Wolf Haven. So that's a big piece of what we do, sanctuary.
So you take in wolves that are not wild wolves.
Right.
And you keep them there for the eternity?
Yes. Once we rescue a wolf, they're going to live and die there.
So this is the case where you're breeding him and putting him back into the wild.
Not the rescued wolves. It gets a little complicated.
Talk about Wolf Haven. I mean, you do rescue wolves. Do you have other wolves too then?
We have other wolves too.
All right.
We do a lot. Believe me, we do a lot.
Well, that's why I'm trying to find this out.
We also participate in two federally managed captive breeding programs.
Okay.
And those are for two types of wolves that were almost completely exterminated from the face of the earth. By the time Mexican wolves were rounded up from the wild to keep them from being exterminated, there were only seven left. Seven.
Small gene pool.
Really small gene pool. And then twice as many for the red wolves. Rounded up, declared extinct in the wild, 14. There are different participating places around the U.S., but the whole program is managed by the federal government.
Let's get back to Wolf Haven first. So you take care of wolves that people had, you know, the tame wolves that weren't born in the wild.
Right.
So you rescue wolves.
Right.
And then you're also in a federal breeding program.
Yes. Yes. And those programs, we don't make the decisions. We're part of a larger consortium. Over the years, though, we have had 10 litters of Mexican wolves born at Wolf Haven and 3 litters of red wolves born. And we're also a pre-release facility for the Mexican wolf. So we've had three packs of Mexican wolves released in the wild.
Okay, let's talk about this for a minute. So I'm assuming you're getting funding for that from the federal government.
No, but it's a great assumption. I assumed that too when I first went to work there. We don't get any federal funding or state funding. we really do depend on grants and donations, primarily donations, and we have appeals. We sell memberships. We sell symbolic wolf adoptions. We have a few events, but not too many. We don't get any kind of federal funding. You have to apply to participate in these programs, and Wolf Haven did because we wanted to be a part of something that's preserving the healthy gene pool of these two types of wolves who were almost completely wiped off the face of the earth.
Well, for centuries and for a millennium, people have been afraid of wolves.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a natural, because back before, they used to be their prey.
You know, I
think it's a natural inborn thing to be afraid of wolves. I don't, you know, it's kind of like one of those things. But my question is, there's still that fear, not fear, but the anger that for a lot of people about wolves, particularly farmers with livestock and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you're participating in a breeding program, and you're depending on volunteers and money from people. I mean, how is that working out?
It's working out in Washington. It's not easy. There's no silver bullet, but it is working out because Wolf Haven participates in a wolf advisory group that's overseen by Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. And that group, I think it's 19 individuals.
You don't care.
Well, it consists of ranchers, both cattle and sheep, hikers, hunters, conservation groups, like Mule Deer Foundation, Humane Society. So we have members who meet. In fact, they just met last week for 2 days in Olympia. And they hash everything out so that WDFW can make decisions and move forward in a way that hopefully will benefit those with livestock and those who want to see wolves in the wild.
Just in the last few years, I know they've released wolves into the wild back in eastern Washington and Idaho.
No, I have to correct you there.
Well, because there's been conflict in there.
There's been conflict, but no wolves were reintroduced by people in our state. They came in naturally from the bordering places. They came in from Idaho, from Oregon, and British Columbia. And there has been some isolated conflict. There's also been a lot of successes.
There's been no release of any wolves in Washington State?
No, not at all, at all. And I also wanted to correct something else that I think is a very popular misconception, and I understand why people feel this way.
I probably believe it then, whatever it is.
And that is that people are wolves' prey. That isn't true. People are not wolves' prey.
Not now.
No, they never have been.
Oh, baloney.
No, that's the truth. You can look. And they're not.
Our early ancestors were deathly afraid of packs of wolves.
Oh, yeah. You got
the big bad wolf. You got wolf stories that go back in tales for centuries and for millennium.
People
were afraid of wolves.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But people are not a wolf's natural prey. In fact, there's only been two cases of human death attributed to a wolf in the whole continent of North America in the past 100 years, and that's even debatable. That isn't even 100% accepted.
Well, 100 years ago, most of the wolves were eradicated, so there weren't that many wolves around.
Oh, there were until we eradicated them, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
If you look at a map, which I happen to have with me.
Oh, good.
If you look at a map.
Now, she's going to show me a snap here now. A snap is a map of, no, we don't need to look at the map.
Well, at one time, if you looked at the U.S. and Canada, Mexico, if there were wolves in every state, they were everywhere. All in northern Mexico, all across the U.S.,
across the
most
whole world,
of Canada.
Except maybe
not across
tropics.
The whole world, but a lot of the U.S. and the rest of the continent. By the 1970s, you look at that same map, and they're gone from Mexico. They're nearly completely gone from the U.S., just a tiny bit of upper Minnesota, and there's some still
in
British
Columbia.
Let me ask
you this question. I mean, and this is a question people ask all the time. Why do we need to have wolves?
I think we need to have wolves for a few reasons. My personal number one reason is that I believe in the sanctity, if you will, of all animals, of all animal life. I don't think humans are in a position or should place themselves in a position to determine what gets to exist and what doesn't get to exist.
You didn't answer my question.
Oh, I know. I think I am. And I firmly believe that. Why we should care about them as a species beyond the fact that they have every right to be a species.
Besides that.
Is that they're very important in the ecosystem. They are the apex predator. They're at the top of the food chain. Anytime you remove anything from the ecosystem, it affects everything else. But if you take out the thing at the top,
they were removed 300 years ago. I mean,
no, it wasn't that long ago.
100 years ago.
If you remove something,
the ecosystem hasn't adapted to no wolves.
Well, I'll tell you,
is that why we got all these deer around here now?
That could be. I could be. I'll tell you one of the things that happened that's repeated a lot is in Yellowstone, wolves were reintroduced by man. Prior to the reintroduction, Yellowstone's landscape had really changed dramatically. And a lot of biologists and scientists say it's because the top predator was taken away. So all the ungulates there, they had nothing to be afraid of.
Ungulates.
Ungulates.
Come on now.
What's an ungulate?
I assume it's a living species of something.
Kind of. It's the deer, elk.
Ungulate. So what does ungulate mean? Does that mean with horns or with hooves or what?
You know, I honestly don't know what it means.
But you use the word.
Because I know what it is. And I'm telling you, it's a deer, it's an elk, something like that. But they weren't afraid. They had no top predator anymore because the predators were all exterminated. So they over-browsed. They browsed the willow down to nubs. They browsed all the trees by the marshes down to nubs. And that took away habitat for songbirds. It took away habitat for beavers. It took away just, it affected the bankside of the river. Once wolves were reintroduced, it's not that they were killing the ungulate, the elk, like crazy. It's that they affected that elk's behavior. They began to be afraid, and they were not as prone to just park and eat. That's not really natural behavior for a deer, to park and eat. They're supposed to be prey around to keep them on guard and moving around.
So let's get off the breeding program right now. But I got one more question about that. When are those? You got some wolves now, right? You got some families, got
some packs, right? Yeah. Right. Yeah. At Wolf Haven, yes.
When are you going to release those? How does that do? They come and pick them up and take them?
No, those decisions we don't make. Those decisions,
I know.
But if we're told from year to year to year, we would really like to see this particular pack transferred, then usually we participate in the transfer. The last transfer we had where they were released in the wild was in December. There was a family of Mexican wolves. All but one were born at Wolf Haven. So it was parents and their kids, their pups, who weren't pups anymore. They had grown.
Right.
And the whole family group was transferred. Oh, it was quite a process. Partway by Wolf Haven, and then partway they were picked up by other people, and then they were transferred down to Mexico. We had a couple of staff people who went across the border into Mexico, and that whole family was released into Mexico.
So we haven't released any in Washington State?
No.
Okay.
No.
Right.
No, I know there's urban legends out there about Schwann's trucks coming in and unloading wolves, but that is an urban legend. No Schwann's trucks have dropped off anything but whatever Schwann's trucks deliver.
So let's talk about your rescue wolves.
Okay.
Now, how many of those do you have out there right now?
We have 56.
That's a lot of wolves.
That is a lot.
How much property do you have?
You know, we have 82 acres, but the wolf sanctuary part of it is only 30 of those acres. So the rest of it is mounded. We have the Mima Mound Prairie. So we do a lot of prairie restoration. We've got wetlands, woodlands, all that stuff. We don't have more than about 30 acres for wolf enclosures.
For us locals, you actually get the Tenino Mounds.
Oh, the Tenino Mounds? Okay. Well, I've heard Mima Mounds, Mima Mounds.
They're Mima Mounds, but what you have there are the Tenino Mounds.
The Tenino Mounds, okay.
But anyway,
and
go ahead.
We keep the wolves paired, typically, male and female, because they're really social animals, and they do much better when they're with a companion animal.
So do they ever get together in packs?
No, not unless it's the red wolf or the Mexican gray.
Well,
and they actually have that. No. And the reason for that is a pack means a family. Mm-hmm. So in the wild, when you're talking about a pack,
okay, so
they're blood relatives.
Families.
Yeah, and we have rescued wolves from Washington State, from Idaho, Illinois, Texas.
Are there other wolf rescue places in the United States?
Are there other rescue places?
For wolves.
There are. We all operate a little bit differently. Wolf Haven has a very strong philosophy of hands off. So when we rescue wolves, We try to let them alone as much as possible. There are other sanctuaries that operate a little bit differently. Wolf Haven, by the way, I have to tell you this. I'm really proud that we're the only globally accredited sanctuary in the world. And we achieved that in 2015.
Who gave you that designation?
There is an organization called Global Accreditation of Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries, GFAS.
Animal Sanctuaries.
Yeah.
Not just wolf sanctuaries.
And they will go around the world.
Elephant sanctuaries,
right.
and everything.
Right. They do animals of all kinds. But as long as you meet certain.
I was going to say, very briefly, what is the criteria for that?
There's a lot of criteria, but very briefly, you have to make decisions that are in the best interest of the animals, not people. So whatever you're doing, you have to think, is this going to benefit this animal that's living here? And that's what we do.
There was a time, and maybe a decade ago or so, when people could come out to Wolf Haven and spend some time with the wolves, howl with the wolves, and all that kind of stuff. You don't do that anymore, do you?
No, we don't, and that's all part of the process.
So what do you see when you go out to Wolf Haven?
We still have a public route, which is what we always had. We never had all of the wolves on exhibit, ever, 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 because wolves don't really feel comfortable around people. The ones that are most comfortable are the ones you might see on the public route. So you make a reservation, you come, you get a 50, that's 50-minute walking visit, a guided visit. You're with a very trained guide. You stop in front of about 6 enclosures. He or she will tell you about the animals in the enclosures as well as just wolves in general. And you may or may not hear them howl. We don't typically do things to entice them to howl, but they howl a lot. So if you're lucky, you're going
to
hear them.
When was the decision made to stop it from being people-friendly to being wolf-friendly? It used to be people-friendly.
Exactly, yeah. I think more people-friendly, yes. It's been an evolution. I think as we've all learned more about wolves and wolf behavior, we've evolved as a sanctuary. And our mission of working to conserve and protect wolves and their habitat, we started more closely examining every single thing we did. So we looked at howlins, which is how many people know
us. Because that used to be a big thing. You'd go out and you'd howl with the wolves. That
right,
was, I mean,
right.
You've got people from all over wanting to come out and do that. You don't do that.
We don't do that exactly. We modified it. We do something called a Midsummer's Night. And we changed it so that it would be of more value for people and it would not cause any stress to the wolves. What it means is that a smaller group of people come. They pay more money. They get a lot more. They still spend the night. They get dinner, spend the night, go into the sanctuary with our sanctuary director, who rarely brings people into the sanctuary herself. She's been there 17 years. They camp. They see videos of some of our wolves. They see videos of the pups. They go back in the morning. They get breakfast. And what we found is the people that do that really get a lot more connected with Wolf Haven and our mission than those who came to Howlands. Howlands were fun. I enjoyed them. I got to be the MC. I had a great time. But we always did evaluations, and some people were not happy because with that number of people, we had to limit the amount of time they could spend in the sanctuary to 15 minutes. Get a group in, get a group out, get a group in, get a group out. People were not happy with that. And we always had a wolf or two who was stressed out. And this way, we don't. We make the people happy. We make the wolves happy. And we've had return visitors for the 4 or so years we've offered it.
So I want to ask you a couple more questions. And then I want to talk about how people can make appointments and reservations. What's your budget? How much money do you spend every year?
You know, I can't answer that.
You're the director of communication.
I can, but I don't handle our finances, so I really don't know. I know
I would suggest that you find that out sometime.
Okay. We're listed on GuideStar, and I know our 990s are listed on GuideStar. We have to submit them every year, and we're audited.
I just ask you what your annual budget is. I assume it varies. Where do you get most of your money from?
Donations. We get most of our money from
donations. You know what percentage
donations.
That is?
No, I don't. I don't know that. Our director of development would, and our executive director, but we do appeals 3 times a year, spring, summer, fall. Of course, Christmas is a big time, the holidays. And like I said, we offer symbolic adoptions for a price, and we offer memberships.
Sure. Symbolic adoption would be great. Get a picture of the wolf, you get an adoption certificate, you hang it on your wall.
Yes.
And you make a little contribution.
And you get a biography.
That's a great idea.
That's
a great gift for people.
It is.
For kids or something for Their birthday or something.
Not just kids.
I know, but I'm looking at kids.
I give it to my dad. He's 93. I give it to him every year.
Does he look at the picture then every day?
He's replaced my picture in the guest bathroom with the wolf. I'm not kidding.
The second question is, how many people work at Wolf Haven? How many paid employees? How many volunteers?
We have about 70 volunteers, and we've got 17 employees. Not all are full-time.
So you have a pretty good-sized budget then.
We have a good-sized staff. We've really been beefing up our education department, and it's been amazing. We're doing outreach at colleges, we're doing Skype classes in other countries, doing a lot of outreach.
So if somebody wanted to be a volunteer, what would they need to do?
The first thing would be to fill out the application.
Sure.
And you can find that on our website.
Which is
wolfhaven.org.
Okay.
And once that's completed and submitted, then they'll be contacted by our director of volunteer services, and she sets up a one-on-one interview. She's great.
Does she interview everybody, or she just rejects some applications offhand?
You know, she will interview just about everybody. We do have an age minimum. I think it's maybe 16, 17. You can't really come out there and volunteer without your parent joining you. But most of the volunteers are adults. She interviews you, finds out what your interests are, what you want to do, what your background is, and then kind of tries to match you up with what might be the best volunteer opportunity. I think the most popular volunteer opportunities are being the guides, because you get to see the wolves, as opposed to being an office assistant. But we have had long-term office assistants who, honestly, they come out once a week, and they have for 10 years. It's amazing.
So if I wanted to come out or bring one of my grandkids out or something, what would I do? I suppose I could go online and look it up, but why don't you tell me?
You can go online, and on our very first page, there's a beautiful big button, and it says, make your reservation now. You click on it, and you just start looking at the calendar.
And there's a fee.
There is a fee, and for adults, it's $12, but for seniors, military, active duty military, and youth, it's $10. For younger youth, it's $7, and then 3 and under are free, although 3 and under may not find it that interesting, because we're asking people to stay together as a group, to talk softly, not to run, and some three-year-olds can do that better than others.
I assume I can't bring my dog out.
You can't bring your dog out. No, you can't bring your dog out. No, no, no.
Well, listen, we're getting near the end of this interview. We've been talking now, for over 30 minutes.
Wow, I haven't even told you any rescue stories.
Well, I'm going to give you a chance to tell me something. I'll give you a couple minutes. You can tell me anything you want. You can talk about rescue stories. You can talk about, Wolf Haven, whatever
okay.
you want.
One thing I want to stress is, please, anybody listening, don't purchase a wolf or a wolf dog as a pet.
Do you take
wolf dogs?
Yeah.
We have some. We have about 10 right now. Primarily, we take wolves, but we have taken wolf dogs if we have space, various reasons. It may work out once in a blue moon. Most of the time, it does not. People don't realize that. They might buy one with the best intention, and it's just not going to work out. They often have instincts that we don't want in our domestic animals. That's why they're considered wild. We don't want our domestics to have a strong prey drive, or to be able to escape from a fenced-in yard, or to challenge us for position
dominant
in the pack.
Right.
We don't want that in our domestics. So we always say there's hundreds of breeds of dogs out there. You can get some that look almost just like a wolf. Why don't you do that? Because it only hurts the wolves.
It's a wolf.
Right.
Yeah.
Some people pay thousands of dollars and they don't get what they think they bought. That happens too.
Well, I'm going to call this interview to an end, Kim.
Okay.
I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, learn a little bit more about Wolf Haven. And people can go to wolfhaven.org and find out anything they need to know, right?
They can. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, you name it, Tumblr, we're there. Instagram.
Kim Young, Director of Communications for the Wolf Haven International. Thank you very much for being my guest.
Thank you, Ken.
Me and the Java and me, yeah. A cup, a cup, a cup, a cup.